Vectus Radio podcasts are sponsored by Break the Cycle CIC, rebuilding self-esteem in people who have experienced domestic abuse. For more, email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk.
Vectus Radio. Now, look, we've got a special guest in, but before we talk to special guest John Ward, I just want to tell you that every morning you wake up and everything is where it should be. Not where, you know, just say, for instance, the knives and forks I never put back in the right place. But everything else away from, you know, the earth is, you wake up and there it is. There's the moon, there's the sun. Well, sometimes you can see it, not on a day like today, because unfortunately it's cloudy and it's raining. But I'm always fascinated by the fact that I leave the front door at about 6:30 and there's Orion's Belt. And it never moves. And there it is. And at the weekend, there was this big explosion and in Tonga, I think it was Tonga, and you just expect the Earth to be sort of knocked off course a little bit, but no, you wake up and there it is. Everything's in exactly the same place, and it's fascinating. And that's why when John Ward got in touch and said, I want to come in and talk about the stars and stuff, I thought, perfect, come in, because this is something I'm fascinated by but know nothing about, really. So welcome, John Ward.
Ian, good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity for me to talk about the stars and astronomy.
It's a pleasure. Do you ever get like, I'm amazed that you wake up, there it is. It's not moved, there it is. It stayed exactly the same place. It's, you know, it moves around, obviously, during the course of the day, but if you get up at 6:30 and you look out, there it is. Of an evening, we used to leave the house, have our tea, leave the house, go for a walk. There's Orion's Belt over the road, you know, in the same place. And what always fascinates me is they say the moon controls the tides. That's powerful stuff, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, just by the mere act of looking up into the sky, Ian, we become involved in astronomy as generations before us did for thousands of years. And happily, they're all stable and they're all there. The moon is receding away from us at the rate of 1 inch per year. So it's not going to affect the tides for quite a while yet. So we don't need to worry about that.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fascinating. So 1 inch a year, it's moving away.
That's what they suggest. Yeah, that's what they measure.
What effect will that have on us as, you know, as time goes on?
Let's say in a few hundred years, well, the tides will be less severe. And so they'll get milder and milder. And I don't know what will happen eventually. Maybe there'll be no tides, but who knows what will happen then.
Wow. That's we don't have to worry about that, though, do we?
I don't think we do.
No. When will we? Are we talking hundreds, thousands of years?
You'd have to ask a professional astronomer about that. I'm just a mere amateur, and I don't have the answer to that question right now.
So what made you get into it? When did you get into it?
Okay. I saw a man on TV called Patrick Moore, the great Sir Patrick Moore, who would always start his programmes by, good evening and welcome to the sky at night. And dear old Patrick, miss him so much. But happily, there's a lot of footage on the Sky at Night programmes on YouTube, of course, of all the great work that Patrick did. He was responsible for getting hundreds of thousands of people, or millions maybe, worldwide into amateur astronomy. And he always professed that he was only an amateur, but he actually mapped the moon through his telescopes, and some of the NASA astronauts used those drawings as a basis to compile their true maps that they used when they actually went to the moon. So it was Patrick's fault that I became involved in astronomy at the age of 6, and I've been doing it ever since, and I love it.
I bet. I'm guessing you got all the gear.
Yeah, you acquire a telescope, and in 1971, I bought my 3-inch refractor for £60, which was a lot of money then. But with the aid of a nice auntie and a paper round and such like, I saved up to buy it. And so that means I respect it and look after it. And it is a scientific instrument, after all. And with that, I can resolve the rings of Saturn. I can see the moons of Jupiter. I can see craters on the moon down to about a mile across. So yeah, the good old trusty old 3-inch refractor has served me well for at least 50 years.
Wow. So you can see all of those things that you just seen. How far are those things you mentioned away? What's the furthest thing you mentioned away?
Okay, the furthest thing I mentioned away is Saturn. and that's about 750 million miles. And
you can see it.
You can see the rings with it, yeah. It's amazing what you can see with the naked eye. In astronomy, the distances are so large that we can't use miles or kilometres. It just won't do. The numbers would be far too big. So we have to use what's called light minutes or light hours or light years. So what is a light year? Well, it's the distance that a beam of light travels in 1 year. It's travelling at 186,000 miles a second. So that's about 6 million miles a year. Now, we can see things that are several light years away. Let me give you an example. If we could see the sun today and you went outside, say, at 12:30 and it exploded, it's just say it broke in half, you wouldn't see anything for 8.5 minutes, because that's how long it takes the light traveling at 186,000 miles a second. That's how long it takes to travel the 93 million miles between us and the sun. From Jupiter, it would take 20 minutes. If Saturn broke in half, you wouldn't see that for 40 minutes.
This is why I find it amazing that you got this thing that you just described. It's massive.
Yeah.
It is huge. Mm. And yet, every day, I could leave my house and that star will be up there in the same place. It blows my mind. It really does. When you realise just how big everything is out there. And we're just a little tiny little dot, aren't we?
We are. And we're just one of nine rocks going round and a very ordinary, luckily for us, stable star, which is halfway through its life. I could show, if the sky, well, the sky is going to be clear tonight. Let's imagine we go over to Fort Victoria and I could show you stars in the sky tonight that are different colours. Why are they different colours? Because they're different ages. You have blue, white, you have blue stars, which are very, very young and very, very hot. Then they become white, and when they're a bit older, then they become yellow, like our sun, halfway through its life. Then when they get a bit older, they become orange, and then eventually they go red, and then they explode and die.
Just put all the sun worshippers' minds at rest. It ain't going to happen this week, is it?
No, it's going to happen in about 500 million years' time. So I don't think anyone currently on the planet, or after that, or after that, or after that, need worry about the sun.
Yeah, we're going to be all right for a while.
We certainly are.
You can book your next holiday.
Oh, absolutely, with confidence, yeah.
Fabulous. There's lots of things I want to ask you. Obviously, something that's very topical at the moment, as I was hearing about this asteroid.
Yeah. So, asteroid 7482. It came past last night at about 10 to 10 at a safe distance of 5 lunar distances. What does that mean? It's about 1.2 million miles. It's nowhere near for us. Astronomically, it was very, very close, astronomically speaking, when we talk about light years and things like that. But it was very, very far away for you and me. And that sped through at 48,000 miles an hour at about 10 to 10 last night, like we say, and we won't see it again for another 200 years, so we don't need to worry about that one either.
When you say we won't see it, the same one?
Yeah.
So the same, is it going around on a circuit?
It is. Well, it is, and it's not a circle. It's like an ellipse. They have an elliptical orbit, and they go out to the asteroid belt or the Oort cloud, which is where all the when the solar system was made, we got one big sun and we got nine big rocks, which we know as the planets, including our own Earth. But there was a lot of debris left over from that, just like there is when you're baking. You know, if you make some mince tarts, you always get little pieces of dough and you screw those up into a bowl. Well, all these little bits are known as comets or asteroids, and they come back every so often. Not all of them, but some of them do.
Okay, so do we know if there's any others out there?
Well, there are at least 7,482, because comets have names when they're discovered by the people who discover them. So if you discovered a comet tonight, you'd call it Comet Mac. Or if I discovered a comet next month, I'd call it Comet Ward. Or if we both saw the comet at the same time and discovered it at the same time, it'd be called Mac Ward or Ward Mac.
And Mac Ward sounds better.
Mac Ward sounds all right, doesn't it? So comets have names, but asteroids are just rocks, and so they just have numbers. bit unromantic, I'm afraid. So this one was known as Asteroid 7482.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Obviously, these kind of things you hear happen, you know, I would say 2, 3, 4 times a year, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So are we ever in danger?
Not that I'm aware of. Professional astronomers might have a different opinion, but the thing is that we know where most of them are at the moment. If there was a big one which was in danger of coming towards us, we would be able to identify it. And that brings me neatly on to something that happened a few months ago, which was called DART, D-A-R-T. This is something NASA did. And NASA wanted to find out what would happen if we go to a nearby asteroid and hit it with a missile the size of a fridge to see by how far it would knock it off course. So they did that 2 months ago, and by this October we should have enough information to know what will happen if we they know the size of this asteroid. It was a double asteroid, and it was called Double Asteroid Redirection Test, D-A-R-T, DART. So that's what they're doing. And so this is the first venture into space to knock one off course, so that if, for example, at some point in the future, it's extremely remote, but I suppose it's within the realms of possibility, let's put it like that, that we had, say, an asteroid coming towards us which was quite large, and the governments and NASA felt that it was necessary to send something up to this thing and knock it off course by 1 degree 6 months out, then it would pass between the Earth and the Moon, not hit the Atlantic Ocean or you know, parts of Mexico like the one that killed all the dinosaurs, you know, millions of years ago.
Was that the last one that hit the Earth?
We've had others that have come closer. There was one in Russia about 5 or 6 years ago. The Chelyabinsk. My Russian isn't that good. People in Russia, they recorded it on their dash cams from their cars, and some people thought it was World War III because the shockwave broke windows, and it was just a medium-sized asteroid, but it did hit the Earth, but it landed in Siberia.
When you say medium-sized, how big?
I think it was only 10 or 15 feet.
Wow.
Now, if we go back again to Russia, in 1908 in Siberia, there was one, the Tunguska meteorite, and that blew trees flat for 20 miles. But because it was in the middle of Siberia, it didn't cause any damage. It just blew trees flat for 20 miles. But if something like that landed on, say, the Houses of Parliament or the centre of London, oh dear, what a mess. That would be major.
Can I ask you why you said the Houses of Parliament then, and not anywhere else?
I don't know.
Are you grumpy as well with them?
Couldn't possibly comment, Mr. Mack. Moving on.
Yeah, okay. This asteroid that went by last night, how big was that?
That was 3.5 times the size of the Eiffel Tower. That was the width of it.
Oh, right. So it wasn't like huge.
It's about 3,500 feet across.
It could have caused a massive.
Oh, if that had hit land, that would have caused major carnage. Yeah.
And water as well. I would have thought it would cause a massive tidal wave, wouldn't it?
Tsunami, yeah, big tsunami, yeah.
Yeah, that's scary stuff, isn't it?
It is, and there's a film coming out, or it may be out already, called Don't Look Up, and
it
examines
out.
That theory of a massive comet coming towards Earth, and so
you're the second person to mention that film to me today.
Okay.
And it's something that I looked at a couple of weeks ago and thought I wasn't quite sure.
Okay.
So we didn't watch it, but now I'm fascinated by it because I think it is interesting. We must have a team of people all around the world keeping an eye on things.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're all, you know, helping each other, and you know, it's not a case of here, there's something going to land on Russia. Don't worry, we don't like them. So I mean, I'm sure they're all working together, aren't they?
I would hope so. I know that NASA are certainly working with the American government, and you would hope that if there was something that was planet-threatening, that everybody would be of the same opinion. Yes, I think we should all sign the agreement and send something up to this monster and knock it off course 1 degree and let it pass safely either behind the moon or between the Earth and the moon. You would hope so. I hope that, Ian, that we never have to find out.
Well, I think that's spot on. I was just going to say about the something coming towards you. I'm guessing we know what's on it. There won't be any life form on it, or would there?
There are some astronomers who believe that the life on the Earth started by a comet, was started from a comet. Now, I don't know enough about that, being a mere amateur, to know whether or not that could happen. But I'm sure Brian Cox or something would have something to say about that.
You say you've had your telescope, same telescope now for what, 40 odd years?
Yeah,
I mean that's incredible. Yeah. You've been tempted to get a one that can see a little bit further, or
yes,
can
I have. Yeah, I have got a bigger one. But the good thing about my 3-inch refractor is that it's very portable, and so right. I can put it in the back of the car. I can take it anywhere, down to the military road or over to Fort Victoria in Yarmouth, where it's quite dark. And in fact, a good time to say that I've been on the island 12 months now, so I'm celebrating a year here this week, and love it. It's very quirky, and I really like the island and its people. And the thing is that the Isle of Wight is applied to become an international dark sky site. In other words, I think the council are going to spend some money on special lights that reduce the glare by pointing them further down rather than out. And so that's going to produce even less light pollution on the island, and hopefully we can get this international dark sky status.
Okay.
Which would be good.
I have heard about this, but I don't know the technicalities of it. Mm. I mean, I don't... how are we going to benefit from that?
Well, it just means if they agree to buy and install these new lights, which point down rather than to the sides and out... then it means that there's less light going up into the sky, so that means the sky is going to be darker than it is at the moment. Only slightly, but every light counts.
And how do you benefit? You can see the sky better, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you can see more stars, yeah. And just talking about the naked eye thing and the distances, just looping back a little bit, I'm doing something that we call verbal knitting, a bit like Billy Connolly, who used to do that sort of thing a lot on stage, you know.
Did he really?
He did, eh? So... Good old Billy, love him. If we went out tonight, if the skies were dark enough and it was clear enough and there was no moon at all, we would be able to see at the moment the Andromeda Galaxy, which is, with the naked eye, which is over 2 million light years away. How's that for a...
It blows your mind, 2 million light years.
Yeah. And we could also see stars that are so far, they might not be there if they've exploded. Say, if they're at like a 1,000 light years away, there are stars that may already not be there, but we don't know yet.
Wow. Honestly, it just blows your mind.
It does.
It really does.
It's great.
Do you ever look in through your telescope and think, yeah, that's moved? That's not supposed to be there.
That's not happened, but when I see something that shouldn't be there, it must have been about 15 years ago, I was doing one of my hobbies, which is barbershop quartet singing, and it's great. And I just went out to the car for a piece of music that we didn't have, and I said, look, I know this piece, but I need to go and get the music. So I went to the car, and I just looked up at the sky, and I saw Orion, and I saw the Pleiades, and I saw Gemini and the twins, and then I saw a bright star, and I just thought, that's not supposed to be there. There were no flashing lights, so I knew it wasn't an aeroplane. It was moving too fast to be a helicopter. And then I saw this thing come towards me in the sky, so to speak, and it became one star. Then it split into 2, 4, 6, 8, and I saw this meteor for about 10 full seconds, which is a long time when it's passing in the sky. And I just went out at that moment, and I just thought, wow. So I knew that star shouldn't have been there. And lo and behold, it was a meteor, and it was fantastic.
Well, how lucky is that?
That was lucky. Right place, right time.
Yeah.
But the thing about, the fascination about the sky, Ian, is that there's always something to see. And, you know, look up, and it makes you think big thoughts, like you're thinking now. It makes you think big, fascinating thoughts. And when you think about the Earth and its problems and our daily problems, like the rain today, you just think, you know what, this is all the first world problems. So... It's nourishing psychologically and spiritually to go and look at the stars. And sometimes I've thought through my telescope, when I look at a galaxy, is there someone or something who also has a telescope or an instrument of some sort?
Looking back at
who's
you.
Looking back at me? Yeah, yeah.
Wow. But it does make you think that.
It does.
Because you think this is so... Because I try not to think about it.
Okay.
Because it kind of blows my mind, and it's a little bit scary because you don't know what's out there.
No.
But there must be other forms of life. There must be.
They have discovered what they call exoplanets now. These are planets going around suns or stars in their own right in what we call the Goldilocks zone. The Earth, is in the Goldilocks zone. Not too hot, not too cold. If you go to Mars, too cold for life as we know it. If you go to Venus, too hot for life as we know it. But we are in the Goldilocks zone, and they've discovered over 4,000 exoplanets that are now in their own Goldilocks zones around their stars. They don't know whether or not there's life on them, but this is a great time and a great link to talk about the James Webb Space Telescope.
Before you do, I just think that blows my mind, because I think there could be 4,000 Boruses on 4,000 different little planets.
Couldn't possibly call it.
Build back better. Every
Who knows?
Planet.
I'm not going to say one is enough. Oh, did I see that? Oh, no.
Okay.
Moving swiftly on. Yeah, the James Webb Space Telescope, it's going to be 100 times more powerful than the Hubble Telescope, which has already done an amazing job over the last 30 years. Sure, you've seen some of the pictures. And this thing will look to the edge of space. It will be able to look back 13.7 billion light years, right to the edge of almost the Big Bang when it all started. It blows my mind too.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you must have really, really good eyes. I mean, I'm looking at you, they're sparkly eyes, but I mean, you must have good eyesight.
No, you don't have to have good eyesight, because the telescope will do the job of your spectacles. You see, you have a focusing wheel. So whenever I have, where I live, I have star parties once a month for the residents and the neighbours. So we have people from 8 to 80 looking at all this stuff. And I say, take your glasses off, because the telescope will do the job. And you just turn the focusing wheel and it will do the same job as your glasses. So it doesn't matter whether you have good eyes or
right.
not.
There you okay. go. Tell us about the things that you wanted to promote and wanted to do. Because I've just looked at the time and thought, crikey, it's a bit like watching Captain Phillips. It's on for two and three quarter hours, and I get 2 hours in and I think, I haven't even touched my phone. And it's like, this conversation is just whizzing by far too quickly. So you're going to have to come back. But please, tell us what you're up to.
I would love to come back. I've been here 12 months, and very early on, I got involved in a volunteer project over at the Island Astronomy, which is the Island Planetarium is at Yarmouth. It's over at Fort Victoria. It was set up 25 years ago by a guy called Paul England, really nice guy, and I volunteer there, and we have shows daily from the 1st of Feb at 12 o'clock. It's a 40-minute show, and we start with Tim Peake. He takes you up to the International Space Station for 10 minutes, shows you all around the different pods and how it works. Then we have a film that shows about the birth and death of stars, and then I do my own talk for about 5 or 10, 15 minutes sometimes about what you can see in the night sky tonight, i.e. the planets, the International Space Station, comets, asteroids, meteor showers, because there are lots of showers throughout the year. And We will have regular shows, and it's really, really good. It's really educational. It's exciting. It's fun. You can do it in the rain. And so you can see the stars during the day.
Wow. Is there anything else you want to plug? Because I don't want you to waste a journey coming
no,
in.
No, absolutely not. I'm just really grateful for this opportunity. I think astronomy is for everyone, Ian. I'd like you to come over and see what we do.
Love to.
And at the International Space Station, we'll go past twice tonight. At 2 minutes past six, and at 7:37, it will be low in the southwest. It will look like a star that moves from right to left. And, lots to see. lots to see in the Sky Vars.
What advice can you get? Just say, for instance, if people out there are thinking, hey, do you know what? I really want to get involved in this. I want to do this. They can either come and visit you. But
yeah.
can you give any advice on first telescope, just to see if you are interested in it?
Well, I can. Patrick Moore used to say, there are two types of telescope, a refractor and a reflector. And it's not a good, he used to say, it's not a good idea to spend a lot of money on a refractor which is less than 3 inches in diameter, or a reflector which a mirror less than 6 inches. It's better to buy a pair of binoculars, go out, have a look at the sky, and learn your way around with a pair of binoculars, because it's cheaper and it's easier and it's quicker. And the thing to do, we have stargazing nights once a month. We've got one on the 25th of February. Come along to Fort Victoria and have a look through our telescopes. Don't go and buy one. It might not be for you. Come and have a look through our telescopes. We also have a stargazing club, and we'll be meeting on the 1st of February. And, you know, we also have lectures, interesting lectures about different aspects of astronomy. And then I do the stargazing bit outside. So come and have a look through our own telescopes. Go on to islandastronomy.co.uk or just Google Island Planetarium. It is all there.
Okay, brilliant. So just say, for instance, I do get myself a little telescope.
Yeah.
Where do I point it? How do you know where to point the thing?
Well, the thing to do is go along to an astronomy club or come and see us and come and see me. And I have star parties of my own up at Medina Park where I live. And I could introduce you to the thing. So like tonight, for example, if I was holding a party tonight, we'd have a look at Saturn and Jupiter in the west. Then we'd have a look at Orion's belt, the Pleiades, a lovely group of stars, and then we'd wait for the moon. And then the following night, if you wanted to show your people through my telescope, I'd say, right, you know where to point it now, Ian. Off you go.
Does that mean we're staying round overnight? You know, if we're going from one night to the other, you're inviting us to come around and stay?
No, I can't do that.
Okay, all right. I thought we wouldn't have to cook that night.
Oh,
right.
No. I do homemade flapjacks, but I don't know how many there'd be to go around.
Oh, my wife.
I was going to bring some in today, but I didn't bake any.
Oh,
there you go.
Wife loves flapjacks, I'm sure. Hey, look, it's been fascinating. Really, and it's thought-provoking. It just gets your mind working. And you do, because we get up, and we just, it's there. The sky's there, and it's always there every morning when you wake up. You know, sometimes there's clouds. Sometimes, you know, there's a blue sky. But
yeah.
There's always all these things that we don't really see until night time, and we just take for granted. We take the whole thing for granted. And here we are, spinning around. Just one last stupid question.
Yeah.
How fast is the Earth moving at this moment?
It's about 1,000 miles an hour.
1,000 miles an hour?
But we don't feel it thanks
to
gravity.
Gravity's a wonderful thing, isn't it? It really is. But 1,000 miles an hour, here we are. I'm starting to feel dizzy.
Me too.
Oh, really? Hey, look, John Ward, it's been a pleasure to spend some time with you, and hopefully you'll come back in the next little while. Hopefully you'll come back a week before your big event on the 25th.
Love to.
Brilliant.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.